Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
What's up, everybody? This is Jay, and this video is about, is Tariq worth $2 million? Now, we all know that he's a damn fool, and he deserves what he's getting, but is he worth $2 million? Before we do, let's hit that like button. I need to get 200 likes for this video, and if you haven't already, please subscribe and bang that bell. I'm trying to reach 20,000 subs by the end of the month. Let's get into it. Now, Tariq, we all know, is a damn fool. He doesn't listen to Ghost or Tasha. And he's been corrupted by Canaan and turned against his father by Canaan. And
now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Okay. I'll spark some. Of the United States.
Well, hey folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in, and so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off-grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the Multi-Shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it, and it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200, and it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know.
Okay, I got booted out. I had to call back in. So let me run through this before. Only 1% of the towns or the municipalities, rather, in the United States. Just 1%. So 19,500 towns, municipalities rather, 1% is 195 towns. That's it. Yeah, a lot of people get caught up in conversation. And when you and now hold it, let's relate this. Let's use statistics again. On the chessboard, those 64 squares represent the United States. 86% of the population of the United States occupies only 5% of the landmass. 5% of 64, representing the 64 squares on the chessboard, is 3.2 squares. That's it. If you round that up to 4 squares, there's 60 squares where it's just wide open territory. But 86% lives just on that 3.2 squares. 92% of black folk in the United States lives within that 3.2 squares. And to be more accurate, black Americans, 92% of black Americans occupy one half of a square. That's it. So the people, now that's when you have that much density, you're going to have competition. I mean, is it racism or competition? Or is racism another word for competition? But when you got a whole bunch of people in a small amount of space, you're going to have competition. The law of supply and demand. All that stuff kicks in. And the gentrification zone is within those 3.2 squares. 60 squares on the board, actually a little bit more than that, but 60 squares on the chessboard, there's no gentrification. There's no police shootings. Now, I'm not saying there's no crime on those 60 squares. I'm just saying it's dramatically less than those other places. I mean, if you're black or worried about the police, you know, you don't have to worry about. I've been pulled over in some of these places. Not a problem. And the reason why I was pulled over, I was speeding. And I've been let off the hook at least 3, 4, 5 times, dead wrong speeding. But I'm sorry, officer. So, you know what? Half the time, they didn't even ask for my ID or driver's license or nothing. I know one time I didn't have my license on me, but I knew it by heart. So I gave it to him, he ran it, and everything was okay. But the mainstream news that we hear, you know, the high-profile homicides that we hear about, all right, not to say nothing bad happens on those other. Pay $200,000 for a condo somewhere in Washington, D.C., New York City, can pay $500,000 to $1 million for a condo. Chicago, same thing. Los Angeles. And you might pay, you know, $1 million, up to $1 million for a condo. Whereas if you just go out, and those are all gentrification zones, because they're within that 195 most populated, densely populated cities in the United States. But once you go 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, maybe 90 minutes outside of those areas, who are getting pulled around what you call white supremacy. See, some people think the answer is leaving the United States. Well, you leave the United States and you go to another country, but you go to a city that's densely populated. Like if you're from New York City and you move to some, you're gonna have social too, because you're in a densely related city. If you don't know the language, don't know Brazilian Portuguese, you can run into more problems. concept called Pockets of Freedom. Pockets of Freedom. Any 4% of the population, now, once again, we cannot lose track of 19,500 municipalities in the United States. 46% of the population of the United States, nearly half, live in 1,000. Freedom. Now, the 365 days, well, the days, and 195 countries recognized by the United Nations. All around about some countries defined, but the United Nations recognizes 195. Most people will never travel to 195 countries, every country in the world. I've only been 13 so far myself. How many people, how many average Americans have even gone to or set foot in 195 times? Now, if you did it in a year, you would have to visit 25 towns a day, every day, for every single day of the year. And then that only puts you up to 1,125 towns. So there's an abundance of towns. I think the reason why the TV show Andy Griffith was so popular in the town Mayberry, was the setting of that town, was because of the presence of the United States. I never heard this. Mayberry, but Andy Griffith, he grew up in Vermont. He Mount Pilot, or I forgot which town he grew up in North Carolina. And one of the he was living down in South Carolina. I haven't set foot in about 4 years now, 4 or 5 years. I was in Durham last time I was there. I haven't explored rural North Carolina yet. So I don't even know how I got on North Carolina. But anyway, Pockets of Freedom. Pockets of Freedom, there are over 9,000 of them in the United States. And I'll put the stat out there. Black folks in the United States, we occupy 92 of us live on that 5% land mass with 86% of the population. And if we had our own square, we wouldn't even have our own square. We would have half of one square. But it's sandwiched into that 3.2. So I would say get out of the gentrification zone, and once again, simplified, the gentrification zone is of 195 cities. Those 195 cities are the 195 most populated cities in the United States. On our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV on Facebook. That's our Facebook page. I do have the metropolitan statistical area with the towns in the United States. That's on that page. And then if you scroll down a teeny bit on that page, I also put up there, here are the tiniest towns in all 50 states. And I'm going to go through this. Here are the tiniest towns in all 50 states. Adams in Alabama is Mooresville. Okay. Mooresville has a population of under 100 people. Now, while I'm reading through this list, I want you to think about every high-profile homicide of a black person, and let's throw in Sandra Bland. That was a suicide, officially. But every high incident of a black person, Ahmaud Arbery in South, where was he, South Carolina, George, one or two. We've heard of those places. These towns, have you ever heard of these places on national news? Not to say, you know what, let me give you my experience. 4 years, I lived in Canyon, Texas. That's where I went to undergraduate school and college. West Texas State University, that's what it was called then. Today it's West Texas A&M University. Canyon, Texas got a population of under 15,000 people. Back then, in the crime blotter in Canyon, Texas, the crimes that would get, the most frequent crime that would get reported in the paper there in Canyon, somebody eggs somebody's house. Now, in my 4 years there, there was never any reports of a violent crime, no muggings or murders, nothing like that. Now, the year after I graduated, there was a homicide, and the case, I'll explain it to you. It was a black dude that had some words with a white dude in one of the dorms. I knew the black dude. And penciled something and stabbed the dude in the chest. The dude died. There was a trial. And I guess it was a manslaughter count. But this guy, the black dude who killed the white dude in Canyon, Texas. And Canyon, Texas is a conservative cowboy country. I didn't have any problems here at all, but it is what it is. The guy beat the case. The black dude who killed the white dude beat the case. And on top of that, the white dude's parents weren't mad at the black dude. I can't go through the whole story of it, but I was really shocked when that happened. But here's the thing. Something like that in the panhandle of Texas is rare, very rare. But like I say, in the 4 years I was there, nothing like that happened. Like I say, the worst you would hear about or read about in the crime blot in the Canyon, Texas paper for my 4 years was so-and-so's house got egged. No, high school, junior high school people pranking. So anyway, but let's go back. So, you know, George Floyd, you know, Minneapolis, you know, Eric Gardner, New York City, Mike Brown, you know, he wasn't in St. Louis, but it wasn't far from St. Louis. But so in Alabama, you got Mooresville, Alabama, less than 100 people. In Alaska, you got Hyder, Alaska. It's got 87 people. Oatman, Arizona, 128 people. Gilbert, Arkansas, only 28 people. Bombay Beach, California, has a population of 295. Why live in L.A.? Why live in San Francisco? And see, a lot of these small towns, oftentimes, they are striking distance a larger city.
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off.
Okay, I got kicked off again. Well, let me wrap this up. If you like, say, on our Facebook page, It's My House TV. It's got the 50 tiniest towns in the United States, and they're teeny. Okay. But they're pockets of freedom. They're pockets of freedom. All right. And there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them. And if you want to save, I mean, you know what? To live in some places, you need to earn $50,000 a year or $100,000 a year. But in a lot of these towns, you can prosper on $15,000 a year. Have money saved into the bank account. Put sizable money out of it. You can work at a McDonald's, have a McDonald's salary, and live in a lot of these places. All right here in the United States. You don't have to worry about police. None of that. Affordable living, you don't have to worry about it. But if you're going to live in those 195 cities, which I call the gentrification zone. You know, on the gentrification zone, you have people who have graduated college, and then they're not getting paid enough, or they don't have what they call the right marketable skills, so to speak. So they go back to school and get another degree today, and it's the law of the It's an awesome amount. If you those 190 cities. So, when I hear folks talking about years, but they got a 4-year head start, this, that, or the other, stop counting white folks' money. Because, once again, look at the visual on this, on the chessboard. You're sitting on that 3.2 squares, and the metric that you don't even need to. If you go out Now, let me give you a recap. First generation, his wife, Beyonce, billionaire, first generation. Kanye West, crazy Kanye West, billionaire, first generation. Dr. Big, billionaire, first generation. None of those dudes are people, really, because Rihanna and Beyonce, they're women. Oh, let's throw a couple of people on there. One's gone, but one's still living. Barry Gordy. He and Johnny Johnson, at one point in business, they made the four. They were only two for quite some time, black folk, that made the Forbes 400. They didn't count the white man's money. Barry Gordy saw, you know what? There's a bunch of people in Detroit that have talent. And they don't have recording contracts with Capitol Records or ABC Records or whatever. You know what? A house is a simplified house that is in. He did not on the man business. He got the money. The Griffey did it with solar and the And now on the internet, you can stop counting the other man's money. Stop looking at what this person is doing for 400 years. You're not going to catch up for 400 years. Look at what you're standing in the middle of, because we're standing all in the middle of wealth. Every last one of us is standing within our own acre of diamonds. And then take that one idea when people start the industry insurance. Okay. It's highly regulated. So, because the people who are these, they get like those Kennedy. You know, he got rich off of a bootlegging and what we would call today insider trading. But what he did was he helped form the Securities Exchange Commission, the SEC, and the very thing that him rich, he had a hand in crafting the legislation and the very agency, so we can't do it. Martha Stewart went to prison. Everything that's done is regulated by the federal government. You don't need a license to start a record company. There's no ordinances for starting your own traffic line like the verbal. You've heard of them. Got two sons in the NBA. Well, two got a third one in the league, so let's say three. Okay. Basketball, I mean, there's definitely no regulation on any government level with professional, with amateur athletic board. But with the law about, he got a company. Look it up online, BBB, Big Baller Brand. You can start a shoe company right now today, no license needed. Have any competition? Top denominator that I found among the uber rich and billionaires is they get things that are little to zero. too damn stupid on the political. I'm going to go get some politicians. I'm going to bankroll everybody around that table. I'm going to bankroll that loser. Whatever I got to bankroll. Get this legislation on the book. Maybe we can get AC, and that will eliminate any competition coming in on my territory. That's how it works. I've run my mouth for about an hour now. So, we'll cover the gentrification zone, I'm sure, in the future. And I don't want to risk getting kicked off of here again today. So what I'll do here is I got another phone to call on, but if I call on that my mobile number, they charge like 1 cent a minute. I'm on my landline, which is typically the most secure line you can call on, but that's been tripping all this week. So anyway, I'm going to wrap it up. That's it for the gentrification zone. You guys have a good weekend.